on this 4th of July, there are readings that are set aside that we could use. But when I looked at these, that are just these readings, I think, address where we are on the 4th of July of 2006. The first reading is the beginning of the prophet Amos. And we're slightly into the book, but this is where we start from our readings. Amos was a farmer. He's from a town called Tekoa. If you're standing in Bethlehem and you look right across the desert to the foothills of the mountains, the other side of which is the Dead Sea and the rest, actually a little further down by Qumran, you see this little town, Tekoa. There was a family living in Bethlehem for three centuries. They were still called the strangers because they came from that other town over there. The Lord spoke to this man. And he was not a prophet. And he said, go to the northern kingdom and tell them that their oppression of the poor has so risen in my sight that I'm going to destroy the northern kingdom. So he went. Now, what we start with today is, as it's translated here, you alone have I favored. The text really says, you alone have I known from all the families of the earth. Now, that's true of Israel and of the church, because we are Israel. I have picked you out. And you cohere, you adhere, you are a people, because you're bound to me by covenant in the blood of my Son, Jesus Christ. And you enter that covenant by faith and baptism. And you are Israel. You alone, of all the people on the earth, have I known. Therefore, you have a great responsibility. Not only to keep my covenant, but to be a royal nation, a kingdom of priests, those who intercede for the whole world. As the text goes on, you know, you sell a poor man for a pair of shoes. This sounds so. But this goes on in the world today. This goes on. As we celebrate this day, we have to reflect on what is the providential role of the United States. We have a huge egomania about this, but if we can get that aside, there is a servant's role. If you just look in Europe, which is sold out, there's no discussion about same-sex marriage or abortion. It's over. Here, mostly because of the strong, beautiful Protestant tradition in the middle of this country, kept alive now by evangelicals, there is opposition to this day. After all these years of incessant media pressure, most of this country is not for abortion on demand. A huge percentage of this country is against anything but a marriage between a man and a woman being recognized as a marriage. After all these years of incessant media control, propaganda morning, noon, and night, the sitcoms, the soap operas, the commentators, the news broadcasters, that's to be thought of. Huh? That's a mercy. That's a mercy. And what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about that? In the Northern Hemisphere, we are the only country that protests this takeover of darkness by the mercy of God. And while the Catholic Church has stood firm and the Protestant churches have rallied around us regarding these issues of abortion, contraception, and so forth, we have many people who call themselves Catholic who do not adhere to this. And that's our weakness. So it's the Christian body, as I wish to talk about in just a minute. I know I got to watch my time. You remember recently, a couple of weeks ago, we had this same incident that we have in the Gospel. We had in Mark. Now, I want to show you how a Gospel writer, in the power of the Holy Spirit, relates this, mediates this to us. Huh? You may remember, you might not remember, it says there, Jesus said, let's go, and they took him as he was in the boat. They took him into the boat, right? It's their boat. Here, Jesus got into a boat, and his disciples followed him. If we're sensitive, this is going to be a discipleship story. What do disciples do? They follow Jesus. And they get into this boat. The boat is the church. This is not some medieval preacher's adaptation or allegory. This is what Matthew is doing to this incident, so that we will get it. The storm came up on the sea. They always call this little lake of Galilee a sea, the Lassi. Why? Because it's the image of the world. They know. I mean, my gosh, most of them lived right there. You can, you know, they sailed on it. You know, they walked around it. You know, it's not that big. Bigger than, you couldn't walk around it in a day, but it's big. But it's just, it's a lake. It's not a sea. But it is a sea. Understand? He was asleep. Whether that's an allusion to Jonah, who slept in the big other storm, you know, hard to know. They came and woke him. Now in Mark, the disciples say, Lord, remember this? Doesn't it matter to you that we're perishing? Which is very vivid. This is very beautiful. Here, Lord, save us. Kyrie sozon. Matthew takes that from the prayer of his community and puts it on the lips of the disciples so that we will see the connection. This isn't a nice story that we can look at and say, that's very nice, now what's for breakfast? Now this is telling us where we are today in the church. There is a storm going on. Lord, save us. We are perishing. And he said to them, why are you terrified? Well, I mean, look, Jesus, why am I terrified? It's pretty easy to see, isn't it? But he says, O you of little faith. In Matthew, that's the definition of a disciple, embarrassingly enough. Oligopistos, little faith. Not no faith, but little faith. And he's saying, can you grow up? Do you believe I'm the Son of God? Do you believe I'm always with you? Do you believe that the space between you and me in heaven is about a quarter of an inch all the time? Especially at the Eucharist? Now why don't you come to me and I will tell you what to do? And so he rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was great calm. And they were amazed and said, what sort of man is this, that even the winds and the sea obey him? Today. Today. We got problems in the church. As a friend of mine used to say, le Christ n'a jamais abdiqué. He was a Frenchman. Christ has never abdicated running the church. Relax. Christ still runs the church. And he runs this world. In mercy. In mercy. And that's what we're faced with. And this is what the call is on our intercession and our obedience. Our obedience. Do something. whatever the Lord tells you to do. Talk to people about this. Let there be pure hearts and conversions. You know, these books by Anne, what happens to people when they read them? A businessman out on the West Coast, very wealthy guy. He went out and bought the breviary, says the breviary every day now. Says the rosary with his kids, he did that before. I mean, does something. That Jesus tells him to do. Reflect, my friends. You know, we are not, as I think you're well aware, we're generally not a very intellectual country. We just like to get things done. You know, never mind the theory. You know, let's see how it can work. You know, that is going to kill us. If you want to see a difference, even in our own tradition, read the Magnificat today. George Washington's decree of a day of prayer in 1795. Gratitude to God for what he has given us. The whole nation, stop and pray. They were in more innocent times. Huh? There is a man, his name is Pera, Marcello Pera. He's the head, the president of the Italian Senate and a professor of philosophy. Think of that. He wrote an article so powerful along the same lines as Ratzinger when he was the head of the Congregation of the Defense of the Faith, that they wrote to one another, and then they, so the two essays and the exchange of letters are published now. And as I read this very sophisticated analysis of what's going wrong in Europe and the relativism that has gotten into theology, this is a president of the Italian Senate. Do we have men like that in our Senate? Why not? Why not? Who think what's going on? Who can see what's going on? Why not? Where are the Christian men who go through university and get into politics and by the mercy of God keep themselves clean and get into office and do something, make sense? You can see for yourselves as we sit here in 2007. There are three forces in this world, and one of them is going to take it over. There is Islam. That is the pagan dimension of Islam. Islam can be easily co-opted because of its whole violent tradition in the Middle East. But, you know, read the history of the Middle East in any time. It's a violent place. But when that's built into your religion, that's been co-opted by a violent and in some ways demonic group. And they run it. And their idea is to impose Sharia, yeah, but to have the power. And they appeal, as has every other movement in the 20th century, to some idyllic past that we want to restore. I see Germany did it with the Aryans. Mussolini did it with the Nazis. The fascists did it with restore the glory of Rome. The communists did it with go back to the glories of the great, you know, Sobornos of Russia. And in the light of all of those things, destroy millions of people now. That's always the trick in a utopia. I can justify anything because of the great future I am forcing on you. So there is Islam. On the other hand, there is a thing graciously called secularism. It's not secularism, it's paganism. And that's that. And it is through the whole West. The apostasy of the Western mind. I beg you, my friends, you know, give up candy. That's a good thing. But the asceticism is to use your head. Take time every day to reflect, to pray, and to read good stuff. Whether we like it or not, we are the leaders. You think the Lord could have done better? We have got to think, make sense. A half hour a day of reading something that really cracks your brain open. In the power of the Holy Spirit. Make sense. This has so suffused, and can you see? And it is a characteristic that goes under liberalism nowadays. Characteristic of that whole movement is what? That you hate where you come from. Did you ever notice that? This is the, so one of the forces in this has always been broken families. Satan wants to destroy the human race. The way to do it is to destroy the men. And therefore, to destroy, and through that, destroy the family. And that's been a plan now for 800 years. Starting with the whole mess of nominalism and all the stuff we're not going to get into this hour of the morning. But one of the asceticisms we owe to the Lord and to the church and to the human race is to think. Take time to reflect and think. You know, I'm reading Pera and Ratzinger in this little book, and I'm saying, and this guy is the president of the Italian Senate. Now, I'm not saying everything in Italy is hunky-dory. I mean, it's not, believe me. But there are people who can think. And it's an asceticism. Not emote. Read all this stuff if you happen to be a right-winger. Read all the stuff you like that says how bad these left-wingers are. That's just self-satisfaction. Read a good, hard-headed, you know, if you can find one, opinion from the left. And say, what's wrong with this? Not emote, think. We owe it, my friends. And if things get worse and we get smothered in darkness, how are we going to help our children stay faithful to Christ if we can't think? And the third force, obviously, is Christianity. Now, one of these is going to take over the world. At the center of Christianity, holding it together, is the Roman Catholic Church. It's really the Catholic Church. As I read so many of my colleagues in the biblical field, they call themselves Catholics. They're evangelicals. They're not joining the Roman Catholic Church. But they see the deception of what has gone on in our field, which is leads the way in messing up the world. Because everybody relies on the Bible, right? Mess up Bible studies, you've got the church. And that's what's happened. And these wonderful people, they say we're Catholic. I read a book yesterday, fast, because I had to read it and write a blurb for it. It's not published yet. By four evangelicals called Reading the Bible, Reading the Scriptures in the Church. What do we do then if at the center holding all... If the Catholic Church were to disappear tomorrow, Christianity wouldn't last a year. And they recognize, the good ones recognize this, and the others recognize it not. They're Protestants. Well, what you're protesting against disappears, you lose your identity. And so, what do we do about that, my friends? Do we see who we are? Do we see our responsibility? When you're tired in the morning and say, you know, today I'll sleep in, I'll pray tomorrow. Think. We are baptized. We are in this new covenant. The boat is getting pretty rocked. Can't we get out of bed and say, Lord, save us. We are perishing. Not in a panic, but in obedience to the Holy Spirit. What we need is a faith grasp of what's going on. And enough time that we really reflect. And when we reflect, do something about it. I would love to see from this community men, women, come up who have gone through a rigorous, rigorous training. They know history. They know political science. They know, and get elected. in the most corrupt county in the world, probably. The Lord will help them. We owe it to this world to bring the reality and the mercy of Jesus Christ. Long sermon on the 4th of July, but nobody has to go to work, so. Except me, I gotta work. So let's stand and pray.